listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is back on Monday. The Institute of Medicine released its report yesterday on the implications of raising the minimum age to buy tobacco. The report used modeling and other methods to predict likely health outcomes if the minimum age was raised to 19, 21, or 25 years, respectively. With us now is Dr. Michael Fiore, professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin and a member of the Institute of Medicine. He's also the founder and director of the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Dr. Fiore, welcome back to Central Time.
Welcome, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, what is the case for raising the minimum legal age to buy tobacco?
Well, this is a report that makes just so much sense. We know that kids who start using tobacco are at incredible risk of lifelong addiction to tobacco. And we know that the adolescent brain is particularly susceptible to addiction to tobacco. So in essence, if we could protect young people from becoming addicted to a substance, it's going to kill half of them prematurely if they don't break free of that addiction, we could have an enormous public health impact. And that impact has now been quantified. We know that if we raise the smoking rate to 21 years, we can save more than 200,000 lives among kids who were born between the year 2000 and 2019, an incredible public health impact. And all it's doing is saying, if you want to choose to smoke, you need to wait till you're age 21 to do so. The same thing we do with alcohol.
Why 21? Why not 19 or 25 if you really want to go a little bit older?
Well, I think it's more the fact that we've established 21 is the age for decision-making for a number of behaviors, including in particular alcohol, that has so many parallels to tobacco use. And in addition, we know that the adolescent brain begins to become established by age 21. And that point, decision-making should be more sound.
So is the adolescent brain more predisposed to addiction at younger ages? If a person starts smoking at 19, they're more likely to be addicted to nicotine than if they start smoking when they're 21?
Yeah, we actually have done some research here at Wisconsin that made the dividing point 17, actually. So I could speak to that division of over 17 or under 17. And what we found was that if a kid had a genetic susceptibility, and this is about half of kids in America today, if they had that susceptibility and they got exposed, they even tried tobacco before age 17, their risk of becoming a lifelong addict to nicotine and tobacco was incredibly high. If instead, even for those with this genetic susceptibility, we protected them to over age 17, what we found is that their risk of lifelong addiction was much less.
How new is this information? Tobacco products been around for a long time. Why is this information coming now?
Well, I mean, we've evolved enormously over the last 50 years. You know, if you look back to 1964, 50 years ago, when for the first time we identified tobacco use as a risk factor, almost every year since that point, we've learned more and more about how deadly tobacco actually is. It was only a month ago that a new report published in the New England Journal of Medicine documented new diseases caused by tobacco and an additional 60,000 Americans killed every year. We're now up to more than 500,000 Americans who are killed every year from tobacco. And, you know, as a physician, I'm often concerned that we become numb to these statistics and these numbers. And we got to remember that for every one of these 500,000 deaths, 8,000 of which occur here in Wisconsin, we have a child who's lost a parent. We have a brother who has lost a sibling. We have a friend who's lost a loved one. And these are all deaths that are preventable. And one last point, it's not just death that's the problem with tobacco. For so many people, it's preceded by decades of an inability to function in the way that people like to, being out of breath, being struck with a stroke and the devastation of that, having a heart attack. All of these illnesses that really take the life out of us slowly before we die from tobacco addiction.
Is there any concern that by raising the minimum legal age to buy tobacco to 21, that these products become more seductive because they're not available and therefore, you know, kids, younger people want them more?
Well, the great news is we actually have some real-world experience. I'm going to tell you about the town of Needham, Massachusetts, which made a 21 purchase age for tobacco back in 2005. So at that point, the smoking rate in Needham was about 13% versus about 14% in Massachusetts overall. 5 years later, the smoking rate had declined among, and this is among high school kids, had declined to 7%, and it was still at 12% for the rest of the state. So the rate was cut in half in just 5 years, compared to just going down a percentage point or two for the rest of Massachusetts. So I think that concern, both in Needham and in subsequent towns where this has been implemented, has shown that what it ends up doing is lowering the rate of tobacco use. And here's where it has the biggest effect, actually. Not among people who are 19 to 21 years old, but it lowers the rate of experimenting and becoming addicted to tobacco among kids who are between 14 and 17 years old. Because we know that the 18 and 19-year-olders are buying cigarettes for their younger peers. And what you end up doing is raise that general age that high school kids are able to get cigarettes.
Right, so that's a compelling number. From 7%, it went down from 13.
Yep.
And lots of kids not smoking. Do you know exactly the mechanisms that are in place there? Obviously, the age being raised helps, but do you know what's happening sociologically a little bit more or in the brain?
Yeah. I don't think that we have that kind of fine-grained analysis. But what we do know is that kids start to smoke if their peers are smoking. And if we could raise the age that kids in general are using tobacco, there's going to be a broadening of that impact.
Now, if you're a business owner, a convenience store owner, you may say, this is going to hurt my bottom line, raising the age like this. What do we know about the effects of revenue?
Well, I guess I'd say, you know, for a deadly product that would expose kids to it, I think it's worth even suffering some declines in revenue for that. But an analysis was done and published in the American Journal of Public Health, and it showed that the impact on industry sales of cigarettes would only be 2% if we raise the age of purchasing cigarettes to age 21.
Only 2%.
Only 2%.
Have you heard any response to this so far from business owners or from communities so far?
Well, in communities where it has been implemented, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. In fact, a Gallup survey demonstrated that 70% of Americans favor raising the age of purchasing cigarettes to age 21.
Any idea how much money would be saved in terms of public health costs if this sort of thing were implemented on a broader scale?
The IOM report actually quantified the economic impact. I don't have that number in front of me, but we know that the cost of tobacco use to American society is a number that's so high it's almost hard to get our hands around. About $350 billion a year, a full 12% of all healthcare costs directly caused by smoking. And it doesn't just cause healthcare costs. It also keeps people out of work. The average worker who smokes takes 2 extra sick days per year. The average worker who smokes is 8% less productive than the average worker who doesn't smoke. The average worker who smokes spends 30 minutes per workday on the rituals of smoking. The productivity impacts are so powerful that for most business owners, the benefits of having a smoke-free group of workers are really powerful. If we could offer every business in Wisconsin or the nation an 8% increase in productivity overnight by doing a simple action as helping their employees to quit, I think many of them would take it.
Is there any concern that by raising the age to 21, you said some communities have it, doesn't sound like a lot so far, but that this could be perceived as being too paternalistic, that you're stepping on the toes of a free choice of people who are essentially 18, 19, 20-year-olds, adults by most effective measures in society?
Well, we have lots of measures in our society, public health measures that are designed to ensure that people are as healthy as they can be. I often use this example. If somebody said they wanted to sprinkle asbestos dust around, because asbestos is a legal product, I should be able to sprinkle it around the three of us here this afternoon. You would say, you can't, because that's putting people in danger and putting that person in great danger to him or herself. Similarly, we say that for alcohol, that we have an age of 21 because we know it has an enormous impact on motor vehicle accidents. And I think similarly, knowing that half of the people who become addicted to tobacco are going to die prematurely from it, it's reasonable to not say it's illegal to purchase the product, but you need to wait till you're age 21 to do so.
We're talking about the possible implications of raising the minimum legal age for smoking, for buying tobacco products. And we want to know what you think. Should Wisconsin raise the legal age for tobacco use? What do you think? Would you be willing to give up some of that personal freedom for the benefits of public health? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue our discussion with Dr. Michael Fiore, professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about the possible public health benefits of raising the minimum legal age for buying tobacco products. And you can join our conversation. Were you or was someone in your family an early smoker, and how did it affect aspects like health and nicotine addiction? What do you think are the pros and cons of raising that minimum legal age for tobacco? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Dr. Michael Fiore stays with us. He is professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin and the founder and director of the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. And we go to our phone lines now. Matt is first in Delavan. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just reminded of a few weeks ago, John Oliver did an episode on Last Week Tonight about smoking, and his concentrated on the common package law, which versus increased later ages for purchasing seem to have a lot more effect on the actual smoking rate. Why wouldn't we go after something like that?
All right, thanks, Matt. And the packaging law, first of all, can you tell us what that is, Michael, and then how it might affect?
Yeah, well, could you just, I'm going to ask the caller to describe from the show what he saw is the packaging law, because there's a couple things about packaging, what cigarettes are packaged in, for example. Could you tell me what he was talking about specifically?
Oh, absolutely. The common packaging law that they brought up in that episode was the Australia, which has photos, parts of the face as they would be extremely affected by smoking. So sunken eyes, bad teeth, things like that.
Great. Okay, thank you. That thing that was on the TV show got a lot of press. It's nice to see that you saw it as well. So the FDA received the capacity to oversee tobacco use in America back in 2009. And part of the legislation, this is federal legislation, allowed them to have warnings on packages that are much broader than the very subtle Surgeon General's warnings that are on the sides of PACs today. They actually allowed for the sort of thing that you're describing, very graphic pictures of the outcomes of smoking, a cancerous lung, an individual who has mouth cancer from smoking, etc. That was announced to go into effect in 2010. The tobacco industry has questioned that in court. They've sued the FDA, and it's been tied up in court ever since. So unfortunately, while the legislation said it could happen, it's currently tied up in court. I think it would be a great, very immediate reminder to people who smoke of the impact of tobacco use. But right now it can't happen because of a court ruling.
Okay, well, thank you for the call, Matt. Appreciate that. We're going to go next to Dennis, joining us in Green Bay. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I'm a non-smoker, but I don't believe anybody should smoke, but I don't think you can legislate common sense. If there's laws in place, why do we need more? Let's enforce the ones we have. You know, if you're going to ban it completely, you know, make it so nobody can smoke. I just think people who are adults should be able to make their own decisions without government interfering.
All right. Thank you, Dennis. Much government interference here,
yeah,
Michael.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, I mean, I respect your perspective, and I think some people are going to have different views on this. You know, as someone who has raised a son, I could say that at age 18, my son may have not had as much common sense some days as I wish he would have. And I think a lot of parents may feel the same way, that, you know, holding off until age 21, when our children are able to maybe make more informed decisions, seems like a sensible strategy to most Americans. As I mentioned earlier, 70% of Americans favor increasing the age to 21. And one statistic that I found in the survey really compelling is that 60% of smokers support increasing the age of smoking to 21. And, you know, I'm a physician who helps people quit every day, and this makes a lot of sense to me because almost every smoker I treat tells me the same thing. I so hate the day that I started this. I wish I had never started. You know, I started when I was 15, I was 17, I was 18. I wish I had never started. And to hold that off until age 21 seems like a reasonable public health approach that's supported by 70% of Americans in general and even by 60% of smokers.
Dennis, thanks for the call. And we're going to go next to Thomas. Thomas joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Thomas.
Good afternoon, Veronica, Michael. It's a pleasure to be on the show. I have a question why, in the discussion of tobacco, hardly any attention is brought to chewing tobacco. And it's so pervasive now because so many young men and maybe some women view it as a safer alternative to cigarettes. And I'm wondering what the doctor feels about chewing tobacco.
Okay, thanks for bringing that up, Thomas. Chewing tobacco.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for giving us that perspective. You're right. Particularly in rural Wisconsin, the rates of smokeless or chew tobacco use by young men is quite high. In some of the surveys, 15 to 20% of them are using smokeless tobacco products. Smokeless tobacco is not a safe alternative to cigarettes. It causes a lot of problems, particularly cancers to the mouth, in the upper airway, in the esophagus. It doesn't cause some of the other problems of tobacco, like heart attacks and strokes, but it is not a safe alternative. And in my view, if we were to raise the age of tobacco use, it should be for all tobacco products to 21.
Okay, thank you for the call, Thomas. We appreciate that. And a comment here from Wesley, and I'm going to paraphrase wildly. It's a long comment. But Wesley essentially is saying that we're inconsistent in what we tell young people about what they can and cannot do, that they can join the military when they're younger than this proposed smoking age. They can get a job when they're 16 years old, contribute to society. But then on the other hand, we turn around and say, you know, but you still can't smoke. Sorry, you're not old enough to do that. What about the consistency of messaging? It's a big question, but what about that?
Well, I think it's a point well taken, except that, you know, what in our life is entirely consistent? And I go back to alcohol. As a society, we've made a decision that the downside to allowing teenagers to purchase alcohol does not outweigh, or in fact outweighs, the consistency of letting people at 18 or even 16 use alcohol. I think this is a similar situation, and it is because of solely one thing. The health outcomes are so substantial, and the susceptibility of teenagers is so great that it's an action that I believe is warranted.
And as we get toward the end of our time together, e-cigarettes a little bit more. We've seen a big rise in them, a lot of establishments opening, selling e-cigarettes, some studies coming out showing that there might not be a clear picture about health implications. Should we be rolling e-cigarettes into this more?
Well, e-cigarettes is a giant topic, and it's one of the topics that probably has the most discussion and the least science to guide us. E-cigarettes have only been around for about 5 to 7 years, generally available. For an individual, they're probably safer than smoking combustible cigarettes, but are they an entirely safe product? Probably not. And until we know, why would we want to use a product that is potentially dangerous, particularly when there are other medications to help people to quit that have been tested by the FDA and shown to be safe and effective?
And as we wrap up, just briefly, you've made a career out of helping people to stop smoking. What resources are out there if someone hears this and they're motivated to quit?
Yeah. So, you know, so many Wisconsin residents who smoke want to quit. And to each of you, even if you've tried and have failed, keep at it. It takes many people 4, 5, 6 or more times. For everyone, we have available the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Anyone can call and get free counseling, 2 weeks of free medication. The second option, talk to your doctor. She may be able to give you some of the new treatments that are available. And finally, go onto the web. Smokefree.gov is a free quitting service from the National Cancer Institute. If you're ready to quit, there are a lot of resources to help you to do so.
Dr. Fiore, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Dr. Michael Fiore, professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin, founder and director of the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.